includes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron. One podcast has set out to make things right. This is the Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
I'm ready.
Want to start?
No.
I think we started.
Is this already?
Hey!
Was that us starting?
Yeah, it's us starting now.
Okay. Hi.
Hey.
Hey.
We do the intro now without hearing the intro music, so it's...
It's weird.
It's a cold start.
It's a cold
start. You are fine listeners hear the music, but we don't. We've removed the headsets, removed the music. This is already starting.
We've removed our ability to say the word removed.
Scott Stratton, professional speaker. On today's show, just like last week, here we go. This is from ESPN, a rare article from ESPN, but something I realized, I'm surprised they haven't done up to this point. It's called trade insurance when you buy a jersey. And this was the thing. Back when you bought, it was always, when I was a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, when you bought a jersey, traded. Wendell Clark, gone. Doug Gilmour, out.
I bet if we went upstairs and looked in our closet at all of our football jerseys, that maybe one person, because you have a Stafford one, that may be the only person still on the team of the jersey that we have.
No, I think, Sue was the only one traded. Calvin retired. Is it already Detroit
Lions? But I'm saying, like, active players.
Oh, Tate, Ziggy, Stafford. We still got three. We're good.
I have a Bush jersey.
Yeah, you have Reggie Bush. So that was unfortunate. But this is with the NBA trade deadline in a little more than 2 weeks. This is a few weeks ago. Fans might be afraid to buy the jerseys of their favorite player. Enter Fanatics, the largest seller of jerseys in the U.S. The company announced Monday that it'll offer fans a chance to exchange for either the new jersey of their favorite player or to get a different jersey of a player on their team if the player whose jersey they recently bought gets traded. Here's how the program works. If a fan buys a jersey on the site within 3 months of a player leaving that team, the fan has 2 weeks to make an exchange. We found out that 25% of fans were worried that the jerseys they purchase will become obsolete, said Chris Orton, co-president of Fanatics direct-to-consumer business. So by doing this, this is a major pain point we are solving. The website goes a step further if the jersey is purchased with an American Express card. In that case, fans can change their jersey if their player leaves within 12 months of the purchase of the jersey. This program resonated with us, said Deb Curtis, VP of Experiential Marketing and Partnerships for American Express. At the heart of it, buying a jersey is a simple transaction, but it's so much more. What you wear on your body is a reflection of the passion you have for your team. So this is a natural extension for us. The jersey exchange program is also available on the NBA's online store. Horton says Fanatics soft launches the three-month assurance for jerseys of all sports in November during quieter times. When Adrian Peterson was traded from the New Orleans Saints to the Arizona Cardinals, Saints fans participated in the exchange with most, Orton said, opting to get a new Saints jersey. Fanatics pays the shipping both ways. Fanatics guarantee is an answer to a premise behind a company that launched in August. The company, the squad, announced it would start a jersey rental service for $20 a month. In the past, teams have offered
What kind of fan rents a jersey? Teams, I judge those people harshly.
Teams have offered one-off exchanges in certain situations. In 2013, the New England Patriots allowed anyone who had an Aaron Hernandez jersey to exchange it for a new Patriots jersey.
Extenuating circumstances.
Charged with multiple murders.
I have two things. Mm-hmm. One, I love Fanatics.
Yeah.
Bought things there. Always come quickly. Love them.
Yep.
Fantastic site. Second thing. And I know the answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway. As a sports fan,
yes.
If you buy a jersey, this is the NBA they're talking about. Let's say the Lions. You buy a jersey.
I'm also an NBA fan. I can go with it.
Okay, you buy a Raptors jersey for your favorite player, and your favorite player gets traded.
Yes.
Do you buy the new team jersey with your favorite player, or do you get a new Raptors jersey?
You get a new Raptors jersey.
Okay, so I judge harshly. Who jumps around with players? Does somebody do that?
Well, I think...
Like, it's not your mom. Like, unless they're your kid, and then you got to go where the loyalty goes. But aren't you loyal to a team?
Yeah. Don't mind you speaking to somebody who broke up with the Leafs in a video and now is a Las Vegas Golden Knights fan, and you are a fan of team. But there are fans of players, too. Somewhat, especially going, if you follow them in college ranks. So Stafford had a huge following, as did Sue.
Because they were your college guy.
College guy.
Okay, and then that you follow them
going to their other teams.
Okay, right? I can see that.
Stafford was Georgia. Sue was, I think, Oklahoma.
I'm not at a college. We don't have that here. So I get that. I can see that as so a college
I somewhat
thing.
Understand that. But it's like something like Gretzky, right? Some people followed him, although Oilers fans, once he left the Oilers,
my general experience with sports fans is that if teams trade those players, they hate them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's usually what happens.
And if you get the player you hated, you love them. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because now they're on your team.
Right.
And please don't rent jerseys. What's the matter with you? Like, get a t-shirt if you don't want, if you can't afford a jersey, but have a little loyalty renting jerseys.
I do have, from my wife, I got a Greg Zuerlein jersey shirt.
He was your best player on your fantasy football team. I was just going with the truth.
I hate fantasy football. It's the worst. So yeah, great idea. I love the idea though. What a, like a very cool idea. Yeah,
and Fanatics is fantastic.
And but here's the rule then. If a player gets traded, can you still wear their old jersey to the sporting event?
Well, it depends. Team? If they've retired, I think you can. Like you can wear your Calvin jersey.
Retirement exemption. Yes.
Calvin jersey. No problem.
Or if they retired. But they could have gone to three other teams.
You can't go to a Vikings game and wear your Adrian Peterson jersey.
But I think you can once he's retired. I think you're allowed to bring as a nostalgia one. I think you can, as long as the departure wasn't horrific. Like Vince Carter. People can still wear a Carter jersey now. Enough time has passed. Even though he's not retired, by the way. He's 41.
You don't judge those people like just a tiny bit? Like you don't have like a
I judged people wearing a Vince Carter jersey at Raptors games 15 years ago. Yes. Because he was let out of the door with a lot of anger. But now it's like, well, he's been retired for so long. And then you look at it, you say, oh, he's not retired. He's still playing. But now we have enough. Time heals all wounds. So you're allowed to. Now
I didn't think sports wounds fell under that analogy. I thought sports wounds were forever.
Depends on the breakup.
Oh, okay.
It depends on the breakup. I don't see a lot of people walking around with Emmett Smith Arizona Cardinals jerseys. No. No, but the Cowboys jersey, no problem, right? He didn't finish on the Cowboys, right? But he's a Cowboy.
All my jerseys are from people who aren't on the teams anymore.
Right.
I have bad luck.
You do. And then that's it's like the Madden cover is the curse and Allison getting your jersey.
Yeah, it's bad news.
Well, you still got Cam.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's not really true because
Well, you do have RG3.
One hand guy, my hero. He's still on the team.
One hand guy?
Who caught the ball with the
Jim Abbott, pitcher for the Angels, one handed?
No. Why can't I remember anybody's name? You know who I'm talking about. The
Beckham.
Yeah.
On the Giants. Yes, you do.
So I have his jersey. So I'm completely unsports related. So it's funny. I heard about this when I was at yoga 3 weeks ago. I was standing in line to go through. And the girl behind the counter was talking to another guy and asking if he'd gotten his Loblaws coupon for $25. And I'm just listening because I don't, like, you generally interact with other people. You probably don't know this about me, but I'm just waiting for my turn to go through. And she said that a bunch of them had actually, like that she'd used her mom's email address. She had a whole bunch of these coupons. And she's like, you can just go in and get a bunch of coupons. And I had no idea what she was talking about. So apparently, according to this, Loblaws.
Canadian grocery store chain.
Huge Canadian. This is from the Globe and Mail, by the way, a Toronto newspaper. So Loblaws Companies Limited, I guess, a big, all kinds of, it's not just Loblaws. It's like a huge bunch of stores. Went themselves to the Competition Bureau and admitted they were doing this, that they had been part of price fix. I know I made the same face you're making now. They'd been price fixing bread prices for 14 years. And so it says they went to the Competition Bureau about the conspiracy and agreed to cooperate with the Bureau's price-fixing investigation in exchange for immunity from criminal prosecution. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously, they thought they were going to get caught and charged, and so they went and agreed. And part of it is that they're offering $25 gift cards. And from what the woman at yoga said, you just sign up and you get a $25 gift card. I don't know if that's true, but
yeah, it is.
I don't know if it's harder to get than that, but they're giving out these gift cards. And there's a few things about these gift cards that I think are pretty funny. First of all, they're trying to make amends for ripping people off by giving them gift cards, which they have to spend in their stores. Mm-hmm. So there's one. Mm-hmm. They're not just giving them $25. You have to go to Loblaws to use your gift card. Mm-hmm. You can't use it on everything. You can't use it on alcohol, tobacco, or a few other products. It has to be on groceries. Mm-hmm. Anyone who gets the $25 is agreeing to then, if they take them to court, like if they're part of the class action lawsuit, they get $25 less if they win any money, which is insane to me. And it's just crazy. Like, I just, it's...
How much money do they put aside for this?
It says, Loblaw says it reserves the right to limit the number of cards. The company estimated last month that 3 to 6 million consumers would sign up and receive the card, costing Loblaw $75 million to $150 million.
That's a lot of dough. I waited 3.5 minutes to say that.
Isn't it wrong that it's a gift card you have to use in their store?
Oh, it's, you know, it's people like free crap. And one of the nice things, what I saw, which was nice, what people were trying to do was trying to say, go get your gift card and give it to your food bank.
Yeah, well, that's nice.
I like that movement. And
maybe they should have donated $150 million to people who don't have enough money to eat.
And Loblaws didn't go and say, hey, Competition Bureau, that's we what messed up. What they're saying is, hey, you're investigating us. Let us give you this instead. Because a fine and a class action lawsuit, they have to pay out.
Yeah.
Cash wise. This is, like you said, it's a gift card that has to be used at their store.
So plus, it's getting people into the store.
Yep. 100%.
I don't know. I really want to know.
Bread, like, price fixing scheme.
I want to know the details.
That's the controversy in Canada, by the way. With all the things going on in the world, this is what our news is. Bread pie price fixing scheme, 14 years long.
Yeah. And they're giving out $25 gift cards to make amends. Go Canada.
Go
Canada. There you go. I don't know. I'd be interested to hear what some people who are listening think about it. Like, if you think that it's, like, is it good what they're doing? Like, does it make you feel better about the brand? That they lied for 14 years, but now they're giving out $25 gift cards. Do you feel like they're being honest now?
I don't think anybody cares. I don't think, if you go to Loblaws, you go to Loblaws. You're not switching because of this.
And how much was the bread price fix? Like, that kind of information isn't in here. It doesn't say...
Yeah.
It doesn't really say how much money they stole by fixing the bread.
If you want to be a real true Canadian thing, it would be like ketchup chips price fixing or something, or real Kinder Eggs price fixing something, or yeah, not this, or real Smarties, not the weird ones that America has. They're sweet tarts that are on steroids. Sorry. All right. BBC brings out this white noise video hit by copyright claims.
I thought this was funny.
A musician who made a 10-hour long video of continuous white noise, indistinct electronic hissing, which is a great band name, by the way. I'm going to go see them at the Horseshoe next week, has said 5 copyright infringement claims have been made against him. Sebastian Tomczak, who is based in Australia, said he made the video in 2015 and uploaded it to YouTube. The claimants accusing him of infringement include publishers of white noise intended for sleep therapy. I will be disputing these claims, he told the BBC. Google automatically makes claims on behalf of content creators if its algorithms find a close match between the content of 2 videos. In this case, the claims against Mr. Tomczak do not demand the video's removal, but instead they reward any of the revenue made from advertising associated with it. Without the claims, Mr. Tomczak would receive such revenue himself. I am intrigued and perplexed that YouTube's automated content ID system will pattern match white noise with multiple claims. His video was originally made along with other 10-hour recordings, including one of continuous electronic tone. The claims relate to specifically portions of similarly lengthy videos of white noise, also posted on the site. Mr. Tomczak said the spurious claims won't have a significant impact on him, though he finds them frustrating. If I were making substantial money from YouTube content, such a broken system may prove to be unusable. Similar cases have occurred before. In 2012, one YouTube user reported that he faced copyright claims over birdsong captured in the background of one of his videos. On that occasion, a spokesperson for the claimant in question said the claim was indeed made by YouTube's automated system, and it was removed.
How can white noise be copyrighted?
And people, the white noise, people use it to sleep. They'll just play it on a channel on their computer or something on their phone and just play white noise.
But it's not.
It's funny. I just found it was funny. It just...
Only a computer can tell white and white noise from another white noise. That's the other thing that's funny.
I want to be the one who trademarked white noise.
What? So he has a video that's 10 hours long of a single tone?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
For white noise.
Like, so he made these videos.
Yeah, so then when you can search YouTube white noise, you play it, you go to sleep, and it plays the 10 hours of a continuous loop.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you just have YouTube on for 10 hours?
It's mostly for a computer or your streaming or something like that. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. You'll play a video that long.
That's fascinating. Remember when you went through your white noise phase?
Yep.
We had hip earphones in and white noise?
Earplugs and white noise? Yeah, yeah. Did it on the road a lot.
Yeah.
There's just some things you don't want to hear in hotels.
There's a lot of things you don't want to hear in hotels.
Yeah.
I can't sleep with the white noise, kind of bothers me.
I wear earplugs every night to sleep now. I used to just do it just on the road, but now I just do it every night. But
I'm
still
trying
wake
not
up,
to be insulted, but...
But I still wake up to my alarm, though. That's the funny thing. I can sleep through most things, but the alarm goes off and whoop, I get up. Now I don't play white noise. I play a 10-hour continuous loop of you saying my name.
Aw, Scott.
Yeah. Bang. Right there. Wayne, can you take that and loop
that? Is that your alarm, too? Scott.
Yeah.
Like that?
Yeah.
Scott. I don't say it like that. Scott. I don't say it like that.
The kids,
when they
the
have
kids
to call...
tease Allison...
When I say, like, get Scott for me, then Tessa goes, Scott!
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 Yeah, right.
Don't say it like that.
Well, as long as you don't say Scott William Stratton, because that's when I know I'm in trouble.
I have another story. It's right. My turn.
Sorry.
Scott William Stratton.
Scott.
So this story, another Canadian news outlet from the CBC.ca. So this is fascinating to me. This says, blind hiring project finds no bias in federal recruitment.
Of course.
And they call the study groundbreaking. Hiding ethnic-sounding names from resumes has no real bearing on who's picking from the pile of applications for jobs in the federal public service, according to a pilot project on blind hiring. A report released Tuesday by the Public Service Commission shows visible minorities were shortlisted at roughly the same rate through a name-blind recruitment process, 46%, as through traditional processes. For visible minorities, results indicated no significant effect on the screening decisions of applications, the report concludes. The federal government launched the name-blind hiring pilot project last April to reduce bias in recruitment based on names and ethnic origins of potential candidates. In a blog post today, Treasury Board President Scott Bryson gave the pilot project aim to see if unconscious bias was undermining hiring processes and the government's efforts to build a more diverse public service. He called the pilot groundbreaking and says it's in line with the government's focus on innovation and experimentation. The project did not uncover bias, but the findings do contribute to a growing body of knowledge, he wrote. They provide us with insights to further explore and our steadfast support of diversity and inclusion in public service, two critical characteristics of energized, innovative, and effective workplaces, able to meet the demands of our ever-changing world. So, let's find out a little more about this project that found out that there's no racism in hiring. The pilot project included 17 departments and 27 external hiring processes between April and October. It had a sample of 2,226 applicants, including 685 members of visible minorities, just under 31%. Applications in the blind process had the name, citizenship, country of origin, mailing address, spoken languages, references to religion, and names of education institutions removed. The objective was to determine if applicants with ethnic-sounding names were disadvantaged in the screening process. While findings did not reveal any bias, the report notes that reviewers were aware they were participating in a blind recruitment project.
Ding, 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 ding.
And that this awareness could have potentially affected their assessment.
As Tom Webster, our statistician and researcher on campus, thank you, Dallas, for making that sound. As Tom said in a comment when I posted this on Facebook, he said, so not blind? You know, so you when you know you're being studied?
Not only do you know you're being studied, you are in a position of power. You hire people. So what's going to happen today is we're going to do some hiring processes and we're going to make sure that you're not a prejudiced, racist jerk.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah, not scientifically sound. And certainly not groundbreaking and really awful. Like, they spend money and time and energy doing a study this way and then have everyone know they're being watched is insane. It's just a waste of time.
Self-congratulatory study.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
When people are watching you, you're not racist.
Good. You.
Okay, problem solved.
Well,
if
we couldn't top that, here's Gizmodo with fitness apps and not... Anonymous data dump accidentally reveals military bases around the world.
I dislike data dump as a...
Another good band, by the way. Opening for Continuous White Noise.
They were starting for the Raptors, but I had to trade my jersey in when they got traded.
People around the world use the app Strava on their smartphones. I don't know what's happening. I'm losing my mind. On their smartphones. and Fitbits to track how far they've run. But researchers have discovered that anonymous data dump released by Strava last year has accidentally revealed sensitive locations, including U.S. military bases around the world. Yeah. The user data was released in November as a 2017 heat map showing over 1 billion activities, including 13 trillion GPS data points. That includes where and how fast various people went for a jog, for instance. And if you look closely, something like airfields in Somalia that may house American Special Forces suddenly light up like a Christmas tree. Those pinkish areas where people were going for a run or a bike ride, provided they had location services turned on. And it's clear from the pink paths that those people were, perhaps, running laps around an airfield in Somalia, a country where the U.S. is sending more and more troops these days. But it's not just Somalia. Online sleuths have discovered potentially sensitive U.S. military sites in Afghanistan, Syria, along with sensitive Russian military sites like the Ukraine and a secret missile site in Taiwan. Make that formally secret. As security experts on Twitter have noted, this isn't too far from the kind of data sets that intelligence agencies kill each other over, especially since it's easy to deduce who's using Strava in places where American-based technologies are relatively rare. Smartphones and Fitbits might be scarce in a particular remote area of Afghanistan, leaving us to conclude that it must be the presence of U.S. troops, leaving everyone to conclude such a thing, that is. So how has Strava responded? By telling people to read privacy settings more closely. You know, the stuff that nobody reads? Yeah, that stuff. Quote, our global heat map represents an aggregated and anonymized view of over a billion activities uploaded to our platform, Strava said in a statement. It excludes activities that have been marked as private and user-defined privacy zones. We are committed to helping people better understand our settings to give them control over what they share. The shorter version, tough sh... and you can get the rest of that.
I think you have to be really careful. Like, now, I understand this is extreme, obviously. Like, you're talking about extreme, like, national security stuff. But even just going for a run in your neighborhood, if you post it online, it's one thing if you post it after. But even then, if you always run the same route, then people know where you are. Not everyone who knows where you are is someone you want to know where you are. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like telling people when you're going on vacation.
Yeah.
You know, leaving the house empty, put it on Facebook, maybe that's not such a good idea.
Yeah, we barely do that now.
No, we tell people when we're back.
Yeah, you always say when you're back. That was great. It also avoids people trying to find you where you are away, just hang out with you.
But isn't that, like, shouldn't they have to be more careful when it's national security stuff, like army bases and stuff?
Well, what they're saying is the user needs to be more careful.
Yeah, but maybe the user shouldn't be allowed to use that kind of an app.
Yeah.
If they're in a secure base in Somalia, maybe they shouldn't be running with,
location-based
Nike
services,
Fitbit
maybe
on their
turned
arm.
Off. Yeah. Yep. It's very true.
I have a made-up word. Would you like one?
Don't make any sense. Made-up don't mean no offense. Made-up it brings laziness. What is all this craziness? Made-up. They're
made-up. Fire away.
Made-up word is cuppetarian. It's from... Giles Davis, I'm pretty sure, has sent us in made-up words before.
Keep them coming.
Cuppetarian. Wayne, would you like to guess what a cuppetarian is?
No, he would not. He's shaking his head.
Wayne has made a pass on cuppetarian. It's not as serious as you think it might be. A cuppetarian is someone who's against single-use cups.
Oh, I'm on board for that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Guy was like, the person who sent it showed us the post, and the guy was like, this year I'm not using any single-use cups.
That was like his New Year's resolution kind of thing? It's not hurting anyone. So that's fine.
Interesting word.
It's always neat to take a stand on something that I don't personally like. I mean, I'm not saying that we should all use cups over and over and throw them out, but I just... name yourself. Yeah. Like, you've made... That's part of your identity.
That's where you're planting your flag.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
More power to you. Cuppetarians, unite.
I don't think I would tag myself as...
you wouldn't put it in your bio? Cuppetarian?
Hashtag one cup. Right? Not two cups.
No. Well, no, like...
Two cuppetarians, one cup.
You want to be...
I'm just spitballing some ideas here.
You're off the rails today. You're gone.
We got to get out of here.
Yeah, we got to go. We'll talk to you guys soon. Have a good week.
All right, bye.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.